No, wait for it. Fuck. Oh.
Thank you.
My daddy, he dead. And she like, it okay. You're Augustus's adopted son. It's okay.
Yeah. Right. That's wrong, my fucking God.
Arapachis Augustae. I need a stable of young men to come behind me. Make it so. Make it so. Make it so.
Because you are the wind beneath my wings, I'm sorry.
Fucking what? This podcast has been called The Greatest of All Time.
Ha ha! Yes, it has. We're the goat. We're the motherfucking goat.
Oh, I would join in with the sound of a goat, but I don't know what that is. Anyway.
Oh, yes, you do. Yes, you do, Ray.
She promised you wouldn't tell anybody.
Welcome back to Life of Augustus, episode 82. Don't forget, Renaissance series starting probably around about now. Go to the renaissancetimes.com and our Europe tour, almost fully sold, if not already fully sold, but check that out. Go to our lifeofseason.com, look for the thing about the European tour. Fill out the form, and we'll let you know if there are any spots available. In his first speech...
Disclaimer, this is more important. This is more important. The imagery that is used for the Renaissance is not physically accurate. Go check it out, but I want you to know right now that it is not a lifelike interpretation of things. Yeah. Okay?
You know, I deliberately asked the artist to increase the size of your penis substantially for the painting because I didn't want to embarrass you.
Did you say, you said increase?
Yeah, increase.
I don't think. Okay.
No, I think it's. Okay. I think it's substantially increased from what I remember.
Okay. Look. Just for those of you, because we're two. Hold on, this is important. Two episodes ago, we were talking about women and getting women and pleasuring women. If you're not well hung and you're not very good in the bed, marry a virgin. They don't know any better. It's going to be fine. Okay? To her, you know, you tell her the average size is 3 inches, so when you come in at 3.5, you're like a freak giant. The female orgasm is a myth. So hopefully if you give her one, you've rocked her. I'm just saying, go with someone who doesn't know any better. Make sure they're of age, but someone who just doesn't know what they're doing. Anyway,
and
please go on.
Don't let them watch any porn. Just tell them that watching porn...
No! Good God. Unless it's midget porn. Hell. Then you might be...
Which is your second job. That's the real reason you're retiring from your day job is to make midget porn.
My name is going to be Butt Naked. Butt Naked.
In his first, can I get on with it now? Can I get on with it?
Please. What's taking you so long?
In his first speech as consul, Tiberius announced that he would restore the Temple of Concord in the Forum in his own name, as well as that of his recently departed brother, Drusus. Oh, now, the Temple of Concord, which means what you would think it means, the Temple of sort of peace, stability, was first built by the man who led the attack on the Gracchi, Lucius Opimius, in 121 BCE. So, Lucius Opimius started the civil wars, you know, that followed on from the attacks on the Gracchi, and we had Marius and Sulla, and then the fucking Caesars, and the Pompeys, and then the Antonys, and the Caesars, and the whole thing. Brutus, Cassius, blah, blah, blah. All started pretty much with Lucius Opimius and the attack on the Gracchi. And at the end of that, he goes, I'm going to build a temple of stability and peace. by the way, his period as consul was the first use of the Senatus Consultum Ultimum. Too many mums. Too many mums in there.
Yeah.
Mama, banga, dang, digga, diggy, bonga, bonga, ding, 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 Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ding-a-ding. I used to be able to do that. The Senatus Consultum Ultimum, where Lucius Opimius was the first to use that. Now, interesting story here. We should really do the Gracchi in detail at some stage, I think, Ray. But because yeah, good stories. And the first person who sends me an email saying Mike Duncan's already done it. Shut up. We don't care.
We love Mike, but we're going to do our own shtick.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like saying, oh, somebody's already written a book about Julius Caesar. There's no room for another one. Yes,
the
there is.
Exactly. There always is. Yeah. Yeah. Every generation needs its own version of whatever story. Trust us. He does this horrible thing to the Gracchi, promises to build this thing. And this is the temple that, Tiberius is going to restore, to clean up in the name of himself and his brother, obviously trying to, there's nothing wrong with getting the sympathy vote. It's for the good of the people. It will create jobs. Again, this is something he's taken from the page of Augustus's book. It's a very solid move. And again, he's going to win a lot of people over by this. So again, a very solid move by a politician who doesn't really have to try, but he's learned from Augustus that you go through the motions to make the people happy.
Gracchus, getting back to Gracchus, committed suicide and his head was cut off. This is one of my favorite stories, because I love a bit of beheading, as you know. And Opimius had announced that whoever brought back Gracchus's head would be paid its weight in gold. But when the head was brought to the Senate by Septimullius, It weighed 17 2/3 pounds.
That a big head.
Now, I don't know what the weight of the average male human head is, Ray, because normally when I cut people's heads off, I'm too busy trying to get rid of them, right? I mean, I'm trying to put them in vats of acid to actually take the time to weigh them. But I believe the head is a 7.3% of the weight of an average person. So I believe that that translates for a man into, and the brain is 2.5 pounds. The skull, I guess, would be a little bit more than that. But not a lot. So let's say 4 or 5 pounds tops. But Gracchus's head, 17 pounds.
Was it his curly locks? Did someone fill it with rocks? That's what I would have done.
Close. They were like, holy shit, no wonder this guy was creating a revolution. He was obviously really fucking smart. Then they noticed that somebody had removed the brain and poured molten lead into
gross
into the skull.
Fucking Romans.
And as you would expect.
Well, this is your payday. This is your payday. You got to go for the gold.
As you would expect, they approached what's his face about that, Septimullius. And he said, was that wrong? Like, if somebody had told me that you weren't supposed to remove the bread and pour molten lead, I wouldn't have done it. But no one told me. I thought that was what was expected, you know? So, yes, Septimullius got no reward at all. Now, the Temple of Concord was also where Cicero summoned the Senate during the Catiline Conspiracy in 63 BCE. And it survived up until the year 1450 CE when it was burnt down and turned into a lime kiln to recover the marble for the building so it could be reused. But more interestingly,
so it had its heyday.
Tiberius also announced that he would repair the temple of Castor and Pollux in his and his brother's names. Do you know much about Castor and Pollux, Ray?
No. Were they the... Something to do with Helen of Troy, but I'm going off of old memory here.
Or the page of the book that you read that mentioned something to do with Helen of Troy, but you didn't bother drilling down into any more detail because, let's
That's
face it...
That's one interpretation.
You're a Gaul. Now, what did we say in the last episode? Who are the people that did as little work as possible? There's some episode of some fucking show that we did. I can't remember. There's the Gauls, I think. Anyway.
Yeah.
Their mother was Leda, but they had different fathers. Castor was the mortal son of Tyndareus, the king of Sparta, first of his name, while Pollux was the divine son of Zeus, who... fucked Leda when he was disguised as a swan. Now let's just stop there for a second.
I'm gonna get her. I hear she's really into swans.
Yeah.
I hear she's into swans.
Yeah. Now gods having sex with mortal women. We're very familiar with those stories in these podcasts and our Alexander shows. Very common mythical archetype in the ancient world. But dressing up as a swan in order to have sex with a woman. Now, I know there are furries out there, but I've never heard of swannies, featheries. I didn't know that was tight, Ray.
Live and learn, my friend. Live and learn.
Is it the neck, do you think, that turns them on?
Yeah, it's a classy long neck with the black... Yeah. Yeah.
Well, was it a black swan or a white swan? We don't know.
No, white swan with a black ring around the snake. Just the grace and the poise and the beauty. Mm. I'm getting turned on right now. I'm getting a little woody thinking about the swan.
And isn't that basically the theme of Swan Lake? I'm pretty sure Swan Lake is all about a god...
soft porn.
Turning himself into a swan so he can go and fuck a chick. Pretty sure. Don't quote me on that.
And don't look it up, but we're pretty sure we're right.
Pretty sure that's what it's all about. I fell asleep during it myself, so I don't really remember the plot line, but I think that's what it was.
You didn't miss much.
So, getting back to Castor and Pollux, mortal son and a divine son... And they were supposedly the brothers of Helen of Troy and Clytemnestra, which is where your brief half-assed mention of Helen of Troy comes from. Now, to the Romans, they were known as the Gemini twins or the Castores. So Gemini, the constellation in the sky, a Castor and Pollux. This is where it comes from. Now, the reason they're up in the sky as a constellation is apparently when Castor was killed, he was the mortal son, Pollux asked Zeus to let him share his own immortality with his twin to keep them together. And so they were transformed into the constellation of Gemini.
I hope that happens to us. That's badass.
Well, A, we're not twins, and B, no, I don't want to spend eternity with you, and because I know who's going to be doing all the work through eternity. To spend eternity with you just lolling around, I'm like, you know, eternity's not going to fucking clean itself, Ray. Eternity doesn't run itself. Somebody has got to do the tech support, build the websites, run the fucking subscription system, do all the research, do all the marketing, do all the editing, do it all. And Ray's going, yeah, I know someone has to, and it's not me, quite frankly. Just,
can't we just
thanks?
Source that out to another constellation?
Anywho.
Fine, message received.
So, obviously, the story... you get over it really quickly. I've learnt that over the years. You're like, oh, yeah, I should do more, but I'm not gonna, really. Anyway, the story about one dead brother and one alive brother obviously had some special resonance for Tiberius, right. And he wanted to make Rome great again in the same way as Augustus, so he's building these temples and naming them after himself and his brother. Now, he celebrates his triumph in January. He and his mother, Livia, dedicate the new Porticus of Livia on the Esquiline Hill, which had been built by Augustus. Where, Ray?
This is one of the another reason I think we should find Augustus's body, try to get some DNA and bring him back to life and put him in charge of everything. So not only he builds this, you know, to honor his wife, but they build it on the destroyed house of Vettius Pollio, the man who would feed his slaves to fish if they displeased him, the one that Augustus had to bitch slap verbally a couple of episodes, probably 20 episodes ago, I don't know, but he literally builds this on this man's destroyed house, and you've got to think that that was a very popular move with the people for this tyrant who could do anything he wants, slapped down another would-be tyrant. It was just a very popular thing, and I'm sure the people praised him for it.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. So this place, the Porticus of Livia, was actually used for all sorts of public business. And in fact, I read that over time, it became the second most important site in the city after the Campus Martius. And inside the porticus was an altar to Concordia. So the Temple of Concord is being rebuilt. And then there's an altar to Concordia, which is the goddess of harmony and state and family. Unfortunately, this harmony, family harmony, didn't extend to the whole Tiberius Julia thing. He's building temples, he's rebuilding Temple of Concord, he's building, you know, altars to Concord, but there is no Concord. They have no Concord.
Not in his home.
It is Concordless, his marriage to Julia.
Nice, yeah. Now, it makes sense that Julia is not mentioned in some of these celebrations because some of it was about Tiberius's mother, obviously not about his wife. But still, you've got to think maybe at this point the tension between them is so bad that maybe it can no longer be hidden in public or in private. So, again, you just get the sense that they start spending a lot of time apart. And as we've gone into, these two have a lot of reasons not to like each other.
Yeah, she didn't play a role in either Tiberius's triumph or in the opening of the porticus. And, you know, things, they're really on the outs, these two. Probably both happy about the idea of Tiberius going back out on campaign in Germany in 7 BCE. Although, when Augustus came back to Rome and young Caius presided over the opening of the Diribitorium. It's my word of the day. Diribitorium, which was the a covered hall for counting votes, part of Agrippa's rebuilding of the Saepta. Julia probably appeared for that, but she wasn't appearing for any of Tiberius's stuff. She was like, you know, fuck you and your celebrations. Or he was like, I don't want you there, bitch. Right. Can't stand the sight of your face. So it was pretty bad. They weren't even putting up a good public image at this point. That's how bad it is.
Right.
They weren't even doing
it. When daddy's back.
They weren't even doing a Bill and Hillary, like pretending that, you know, there was something there. Or Donald and Melania, you know, doing a bad fake thing. It was just really, really bad. The Diribitorium, did you read about what an amazing feat of engineering it was?
Well, yeah, I just thought it was amazing that it was the largest roof, which was unsupported by pillars, ever built by the Romans. So again, these people are just really good when it comes to engineering. Not they're taking things that they're getting from the Greeks and improving upon it. And again, it was just this this staggering building. But a century later, it's going to be damaged by fire, and so it's just too expensive to fix. They leave the roof off, so it's opened. But again, you know, at least for 100 years, I mean, people who traveled from different parts of the world probably came here. They saw this building, that it was unsupported with this massive roof. And how could you not be impressed by that type of engineering?
But why didn't they replace it a century later?
Oh, I thought it was too expensive to replace.
Why would it be expensive to replace a roof? You're going to build... Why would you not build a roof?
The roof is on fire. Sorry, that just slipped right out. did they not rebuild the roof because they didn't have to? I don't know.
Well, I don't know either. I read that it was too difficult, they decided. So for some reason in that intervening century, Agrippa was able to pull it off. Yeah. But afterwards they're like, well, fuck, does anyone have an Agrippa? No, we don't have any Agrippas. We're gone. There's no more Agrippas.
I knew Agrippa. You, sir, are no Agrippa. So they didn't rebuild the roof.
Yeah. I knew Jack Kennedy, sir, and you are no Jack Kennedy. Classic bitch slap. Now, fire also caused problems in 7 BCE. A fire broke out in the forum and damaged not only the forum, but a lot of the surrounding houses and areas. And it was determined that it was the result of arson. And the suspects were a group of men who were heavily in debt and owned some of the properties around the forum. And they were hoping that they would be able to make some sort of claims. Now, who are they making claims from? Like Allianz? I mean, who's providing house insurance in ancient Rome? Oh, my house burnt down by a fire. See if it's covered in my policy. Do you understand who they were going to be making claims against?
Yeah. You give this poet or this guy who had a bird a whole bunch of money. Can you give me a whole bunch of money because my house burnt down?
Yeah, right. I don't know where they get. I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, it was blamed on them. Anyway, then there were funeral games held in honor of Agrippa that were presided over by Caius and Lucius. There were gladiatorial fights held in the Saepta. It's part of the celebration of Agrippa and his generosity in rebuilding the Saepta. All of Augustus's family were wearing black clothes in mourning, except Augustus himself. He had rainbow colored on because, you know, he's like, fuck you, I'm the princeps. But the point is the young boys, Caius and Lucius, presided over these funeral games. This is part of this thing we're seeing at the moment where Augustus is really trying to build up the profile of Caius and Lucius. They're sort of 10, 13, I think, the ages of the two of Caius, the older, Lucius, the younger here. Agrippa's boys, adopted, obviously, by Augustus. And now he's starting to position them as the future. He's trying to promote them, get them over to preside over these things. Like a 10 and a 13-year-old presiding over anything, right? It's ridiculous. But he's trying to build up their profile because he's getting on and they're the future and they're going to need to take time to build up their profile with the people and he's working it hard.
Yeah. I mean, how many times have we seen him do this? He's trying to, you know, make a connection with the people like when he had the, was it Lucius or Caius? I think it was Caius. When Caius was doing the maneuvers with the army in Gaul, he had coins made up with Lucius's profile on there. So again, when you're getting paid and you can see the name and the profile of this young kid, you know, there's a certain amount of loyalty that's going to come with that. Or you're going to remember that it was the money with his image on there. So again, this is just something that takes a long time, but he's got to get these kids out there, get the people to like them, make sure they're raised up correctly, not to be dicks, because they're going to have absolute power one day. And it's just a long process, and he might be tired of it, but he's in his 50s. He's got to get these kids going. He cannot wait. And so he started the process of putting them out there before them, and that's what you do when you actually care about Rome and you want to leave it in good hands after you're gone.
Indeed. All right, keep going. I'm sick of talking.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about the reorganizing of the city? I mean, I don't know how sexy that is or whatever, but
well, I thought it was interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, so there, as we were saying earlier, there was a couple of fires, and Augustus uses this as an excuse, not that he needs one, to reorganize the city. And I didn't know this before. I thought this was pretty interesting. So Rome had been split. The city of Rome had been split into little regions. VC, I'm not sure how to say it, like districts. But Augustus redraws the boundaries. He creates 265 of these Vishi and then groups them into 14 larger regions. And each one is going to have its own local magistrates, and they supervise the cults of the crossroads shrines of the gods of that particular reason. Now, normally this was not the greatest or kind of a thankless job, but he gives it more prestige. These people have special honors. Once a year, they're able to have lictors go with them. So this is just Augustus being Augustus. He gives them a lot more work, but he gives them a lot more prestige as well. So they're actually working more than they have done before, but there's a certain amount of honor and glory to it, and they're seen as actually helping the city. So again, he is passing out the work as much as he can to as wide a crowd as he can, but he makes it worth it. He gives them something for it. So again, he's reorganizing this formerly, I think, to a certain degree, thankless task. But again, he's trying to get more people involved in helping keep up Rome and making a greater city. Because like as we said, he's been to Alexandria and he's comparing Rome to that. And he wants Rome to be the mightiest city on the planet.
Well, to me, the interesting thing about this reorganization of the regions is that the local magistrates who were put in place to supervise the cults mm-hmm. of each of these regions, they would have a little shrine on the crossroads, which would be shrines to the gods of the region. Each little region, Vichy, had its own gods. You'd have local magistrates who were there to supervise the cults, and most of them were freed slaves, freedmen,
right,
who were a large percentage of the population of Rome. So it sort of created a kind of job opportunities for freed slaves. So it created like opportunity for advancement even in the freedmen of Rome, which is always a good thing. People need to feel like, you know, there's some benefits, there's some upsides by keeping your nose clean and contributing towards the betterment of the city.
Right.
So he's created more of these opportunities now. The second thing is that he is paying Augustus, that is, for all of the shrines to be upgraded out of his own pocket, which means that his name is now connected with all of the local deities being worshipped. He's not a god.
Right.
He's a god, not the god. Now, he's not a god, but because he is the one upgrading the altars... And this is one of the reasons why people did this, is their names were associated with the gods. So we actually have one from the year 1 CE, where it has an inscription on it that says, "To Mercury, to the eternal god Jupiter, to Juno the queen, to Minerva, to the sun, the moon, Apollo and Diana, to Annona Ops, Isis and Pietas, to the divine fates, that it may go well, propitiously and prosperously for Imperator Caesar Augustus, for his power and that of the Senate and people of Rome and for the nations, Lucius Lucretius Zethus, Lucius's freedman, dedicated this Augustan altar at the command of Jupiter. Victory to the people! Health in seed sowing!" Those last two remind me of communist slogans under the USSR.
"May your seed go
health
deep."
And seed sowing.
Yes, yes, yeah. So he gets his name mixed in there with all those gods, yeah.
Yeah, gets his name mixed in. Now, the other interesting thing here is that Isis is mentioned.
Right.
Now, this isn't Isis, the Islamic fundamentalist military cult. This is Isis, the Egyptian god. Now, this is interesting, and we've talked a lot about Hellenization, the process of Hellenization, on the Alexander Show.
Right.
But for people who haven't listened to that because they're cheap-ass hoes, one of the things that happened after Alexander was the Hellenization of Egypt and Asia Minor, and even right up into Babylonia, Babylon, Iraq, around Mediterranean, Parthia, Persia. And Hellenization means sort of a hybridization of Eastern ideas and Greek ideas, where they would mix them up, some of the Greek ways of thinking about their gods and about philosophy and about art would be adopted by Asian people living in Asia Minor and up in Mesopotamia and down in Egypt and places like that, and vice versa. Egyptian gods, Middle Eastern, Mesopotamian gods, these sort of things would make their way into Greece and eventually into Rome. And Isis is one of those, obviously an Egyptian goddess. And it sort of made its way over the last couple of hundred years into first the Hellenized regions, came out of Ptolemaic Egypt, made its way into Seleucia and Macedonia, etc., and had made its way into Rome and had been suppressed over the years, but now had gone mainstream. And Isis, obviously, from that inscription I read before, had become one of the pantheon of the gods, the Roman gods, had entered into there. And that's the same way, basically, that Constantine officially accepted the Christian, so the Judeo-Christian god, I guess, 300 years later. It was this idea of, all right, well, we've been fighting the introduction of this god into the pantheon for a long time. You know, better fuck that. Let's just embrace it and bring it inside the boundaries. Yeah. So it's interesting when you understand the Christianization of Rome. I think it's interesting to look at their history of absorbing other gods. They didn't necessarily do it easily or readily, but eventually they would allow these other gods to go mainstream. By the way, when Constantine, I think a lot of people don't realize this, when Constantine did that, he didn't personally fully commit to Christianity, as sometimes is portrayed. Mm-hmm. For example, the Arch of Constantine, which was dedicated after the Battle of Milvian Bridge, which according to the historiographies on him is when he, you know, he was facing, I think it was Maxentius, and he was going to go to battle, and he sees a cross in the sky, and the voice says, you know, put this on your shields, right, and you will win, and he does, and then he goes, hey, fucking Jesus is the man, and that's how Christianity got a second. After that, he dedicated the Arch of Constantine, which you can still see today, obviously, near the Colosseum, and we will.
Yes.
Obviously,
rub up against
on our
it.
Europe tour, go and spend a lot of time there. It doesn't mention the Judeo-Christian gods up there, Yahweh or Jesus. It basically says he was inspired by the divine.
Mm.
Now, scholars today think that may have been his way of being deliberately vague to keep all the gods and their respective cults happy, not by singling anyone out. But the arch does have scenes of sacrificing to Apollo, to Hercules, to Diana, although they may date back to when the Emperor Hadrian started construction on the arch, because it didn't start with Constantine. Right. But his official documents, even after Milvian Bridge, still displayed the sun god, at least up until 324.
Wow.
So he continued to sort of at least publicly worship these other gods. My take on Constantine from what I've read is that his allowance of Christianity into the fold was really just a way of wrangling them as a political tool. Mm-hmm. It's like, don't fight them. Just go, yeah, you can come in. Yeah, you're all good. We'll give you a... we'll give you a pass. Just, you know, support my empire, my imperial power. Don't make me fight you. Although he did give them certain tax credits and those sorts of things over the years, which seems to mean they got more favor, but that could have been part of a political deal as well. He certainly didn't seem to have any major conversion experience himself. He was still bloodthirsty, brutal tyrant for the remainder of his life.
Just being political.
Anyway, getting back to Isis. Yeah. Isis in Rome was worshipped as the ideal mother and wife, as well as the patroness of nature and magic. She was the friend of slaves, sinners, artisans, and the downtrodden. Sounds like we should be sacrificing to her,
yeah,
really.
Absolutely, all the time.
But she also listened to the prayers of the aristocrats and the rulers. By the way, her name Isis means throne, and her headdress, if you've ever paid attention, is a throne. Now, according to Egyptian mythology, she married her brother Osiris, which is why the pharaohs were comfortable marrying their brothers and sisters. And she conceived Horus with him.
Right.
But then when Osiris was murdered by Set, the evil god Set, she used her magical skills to gather up all of his body parts, and because Set sort of dispersed them around the earth. She brought them all together,
right,
and brought him back to life. So he was resurrected. The dying and resurrected god motif goes back to, I was one example of it, Isis and Osiris.
Right.
And then something else that people may not be familiar with, the popular imagery back then of Isis with her baby Horus sitting on her knee, either suckling at her breast or just, you know, looking like a little baby being happy, was the basis of the Mary and Jesus images that started to become popular in the empire after about the 5th century. So when the Christians managed to officially ban the Isis cult, they absorbed this image of Isis with the baby on her knee and said, no, mate, that's not Isis and Horus, that's Mary and Jesus.
Baby Jesus.
Jesus. And everyone went, fuck off, what are you talking about? But, you know, after two generations, three generations passed, no one knows, man. Everyone goes, oh, look, it's Mary and Jesus. But no. And if you go to Italy, I've done this, you walk around Italy, you see lots of statues on the side. They have, like, exactly what they're talking about here, like these little altars. I saw this a lot in Umbria, mm-hmm, and to a certain extent in where's Florence? What's the district that Florence is in? Tuscany.
Right.
In Umbria and Tuscany, when you walk around, you'll see these little shrines, these little altars on the side of the road, mm-hmm, where there will be a little votive candles set up and some flowers and a little statue of Mary and Jesus. But they're black.
That doesn't sound.
They're black. Well, because they're Egyptian.
Right, right. Ah.
Right, they're Egyptian. Yeah. Before the Greeks watered down the bloodline, the Egyptians were African. You know, they were Ethiopian, African. They were black.
Gotcha.
So, I remember walking around Umbria and going, oh, look, it's Isis and Horus. And people would be like, oh, Strata familia, et domine patri, filio sanctor sancti.
So, yeah, so they've been fighting against Isis for a long time, didn't win, embrace it, go with it, makes the people happy. So, again, just a very good political move. Let's get back to the rock star. Let's get back to Tiberius. In 6 BC, comes back to Rome, and in June, he is given new honors. He is now officially number two. When Augustus starts his new year of the Tribunitia Potestas, Tiberius gets it the same thing for 5 years. He was also given Maius Imperium Proconsulare, which is at least in the eastern part of the Mediterranean, and only Agrippa had that before. So he is clearly following in Agrippa's footsteps. Augustus is making it known that this is my guy. He will come after me. I am sharing my powers with him. So he might have a shitty marriage, and he probably lost his kid. He doesn't get to be with a woman that he loves. But again, he gets to be the rock star of Rome. That's not a bad consolation prize.
You would think. Now, meanwhile, there's a palace coup has broken out in Parthia/Armenia. King is dead. The fighting between the brothers for a new king has often happened up in Parthia.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, Tiberius, if we recall, that was early on. I think he was like 18 or 20 or something, and Augustus sent him up there just to sort of wave the flag. Right. And they decide they're going to send Tiberius back up there, you know, go up and make sure that this all gets settled appropriately. Maybe Augustus just wanted to get him out of Rome for a while. You know, he's a bit of a difficult character, as we've seen.
But he's basically the imperial fireman. Every time there's a fire, this is the only guy I've got left in my stable. He's got to go fix everything for me because I'm in my 50s and I'm too old. So, yeah, it sucks to be Tiberius in some ways.
Yeah, he's the new Agrippa. He's the guy you send to get shit done. Might also have been a way of removing him so he didn't overshadow Caius and Lucius. And act as a rallying point for the Claudian political faction, which was obviously still active, who thought a Claudian descendant should be running Rome, not a Caesarian.
Right.
He's now 36, Tiberius, you know, getting on.
Yeah.
Proven as a general and an administrator, not the greatest of generals, but good enough. Does a relatively good job. Hasn't done anything majorly dramatic, but, you know, he hasn't done anything on the equivalent of a Julius Caesar, but he's solid, And he spent half of his adult life out in the provinces. 8 out of the last 10 years he's been out of Rome putting out fires.
Damn.
Meanwhile, the people are playing silly buggers again.
The Roman people really get on my nerves sometimes. They are a fickle bunch of motherfuckers.
Keep talking.
I just want to put that out. Yeah, so later in the year, you know, Tiberius turns 36 in November. Later in the year, the Roman people assemble the Comitia Centuriata in the Septia, if I'm saying that right, probably not, which was obviously built by Agrippa, and they chose Caius Caesar as one of the consuls for the next year. Now, one, Caius is obviously not even a candidate. Two, he's not even a man. He's only 14 years old. He hasn't put on the toga of manhood. But these people write in his name, much like they wrote in Augustus's name when he was down south trying to deal with, I think, the grain shortage. The two sons of Augustus, who've been adopted, are very popular. You've got the other one, the 11-year-old Lucius. But they, you know, he is cheered by the crowd whenever he goes out. He's at the theater at some point, and he doesn't have any adults with him, and he is cheered in his own right. So these people get together and they write Caius's name to be consul for the next year. And obviously, this goes against everything Augustus has been working for. He's trying to build up Tiberius. He's trying to bring other people in. These kids are still way too young for this kind of responsibility. It's going to take time. That's just the way it is. But again, they write his name in. They want him, this 14-year-old kid, to be a consul. That is absolutely insane. Augustus is not happy about it at all. He's going to have to come up with some way to distract these people. You can't really slap them down because they are the masses, but you have to find some way to distract or dissuade them, as opposed to running around and just killing everybody. He's going to have to come up with something.
Yeah, Augustus isn't happy about it, or is he? So there are differing views on how this went down.
Mm-hmm.
So one point of view is Augustus wasn't happy about it, and it's hard to imagine that the people did this off their own bat. There was probably some sort of orchestrated campaign behind this. Might have been Julia's idea to build up her sons' reputations. They were still her sons, even if Augustus had adopted them. Or maybe friends of Julia's had organized it in order to get in good with her.
Right.
Or maybe Augustus organized it. In order to build up, 5D chess he's playing here. In order to build up the idea that the people want the kids to be given power, even though he will then turn around publicly and go, "What? You're all crazy. They're barely children." Right. Secretly, he's like, "My cunning plan paid off." That's certainly the view of guys like Ronald Syme. In Ronald Syme's book, he said Augustus had a secret exultation after this. So he was secretly very happy about it, even though publicly he had to play the role of poo-pooing it.
Right.
Really, he was happy about it. So, yeah, I mean, publicly he tells people to back the fuck off. This is insulting to have a child. Listen, yes, I was very young when I came to power, but I had to. There was a civil war going on. Shit was going down. I had to step up. And yes, I've lowered the minimum age for everything by 10 years. And yes, my stepsons, Tiberius and Drusus, were given the right to stand even younger than this. But electing a mere child devalues the consulship. This is insanity.
Right.
So that's what he says publicly. He even prays at a public meeting that people would, back the fuck off and that they would never again vote for anyone younger than 20 to become a consul, which was how old he was back in 43 BCE when he became consul.
Wow.
But maybe secretly he's playing 5D chess here to get people used to the idea of, it's a bit like Julius Caesar and Mark Antony offering him the crown and he's going, "What? No, this is not right. Get away from me with this thing." Just to gauge the public reception, if in fact you think that's what Caesar was doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Get behind me, Satan.
So, as you said, though, he goes, listen. We can't make a kid consul, but I'll tell you what I'll do.
Make it,
just for you. I don't want this. He doesn't want
I'll
this.
Cut
but
you
for
deal.
You, I'll tell you what I'm prepared to do. Yeah, yeah. This one day, one time only. It's the end of financial year. I got all these carpets I got to get rid of. I got to do you a deal. I'm not going to make him consul, but I'll make him a pontiff at 14.
Right.
And I'm not finished. You know, how much would you expect to pay for this? I'm not just going to make him a pontiff. He will get the right to attend Senate meetings.
Mm-hmm.
He's a kid of 14, but he'll be able to attend Senate meetings. And I'm not done. Don't get up just yet. Sit back down. Finish your tea. Step right up. He can become a consul in 1 CE when he was finally 20 years old. What do you think of that deal? I've actually got the song that he wrote to go along with this campaign.
Step right up. Everyone's a winner, bargains galore. That's right, you too can be the proud owner. The quality goes in before the name goes on. One tenth of a dollar. We got service after the sale. How about perfume? We got perfume. How about an engagement ring? Some for the little lady. $3-4. We got a year-end clearance. We got our white sale and a smoke-damaged furniture. You can drive it away today. Act now, and receive as our gift to you. They come in all colors, one size fits all. No muss, no fuss, no spills. You tired of kitchen drudgery? Everything must go. Going out of business. Sale. 50% off original retail price. Skip the middleman. Don't settle for less. How do we do it? Volume. Turn up the volume. Ready to advertise. Don't hesitate. Don't be caught with the drawers down. You can step right up.
The hell is that?
Classic. Tom Waits, my friend, 1976 from the album Small Change.
Nice.
Great album. Yes. One of my favorite albums. So he said, yes, he can become consul in 1 CE when he was 20. People said, 1 CE, but isn't that when Jesus is going to be born? He said, I have no idea what the fuck you are talking about.
No, but, now, but yet he has again, this crisis, and he says to the people, "Yes, I will give you what you want a little later." So again, it's masterfully handed by him. We don't know what he really felt about it, but Augustus, with all of his experience and the fact that he's older, he can stay calm and not just cut off heads. He handles the situation. He has diverted yet another crisis. Everything is now fine.
But the 5D chess version of this is that he planned to do all these things anyway.
Yeah.
And he just makes it look like it's a concession rather than something he's stuffing down your throat. Now, this is classic 5D chess here, Ray. This is Trump level 5D chess he's playing here. Like, he is, he's creating. Trump, you know, I've always said Trump is the Augustus of our time, bringing peace and stability to the empire, making America great again.
Right.
People think he's a buffoon and a clown and clueless and a racist and a sexist and just a fucking moron. But really, he's playing a long game here, Ray. Long, deep, deep, deep game. We won't. When he gets his Nobel Prize, when Time magazine finally puts him on the front cover, when he elects them, they've been begging him for years. He goes, "No, I don't need it. I'm Augustus. No. I don't need the triumph. No. That's it. It's Trump. I don't need Time. I don't need to be on the front cover of Time magazine's Man of the Year edition."
Yeah.
Like, I'm like Augustus. I'm turning it down. Mate, just give it to someone else. I don't need it. Yeah. I got everything. I'm the man who has everything. You want? Okay, listen. If you want to name a month Trumpus after me, January, February, March, Trumpus. May,
I like it.
June, July.
I like it.
I'll take that. I guarantee you that's coming. Yeah. Just you wait. So I kind of like this idea that he. If he genuinely believed that kids shouldn't of 14 should not be given all of this authority, he would have said, "Everyone just shut the fuck up."
Right.
It's not like Augustus needed to give them concessions for shit.
Right.
Really. Although, maybe, counter argument, he's lost all of his inner circle, his close allies. Maybe he's not as politically secure as he had once been. Maybe he does need to give some concessions, grease the wheels a little bit, make people happy. But really, I think at this point, with his money, his power, his military, his dignitas, his autoritas, he really doesn't give away anything he doesn't need to give away. I think really, if he really didn't believe, he would have gone, "All of you, shut the fuck up. You're insulting the tradition of Rome. We're not making him shit until he's at least in his 20s. I don't shut up or I'll shut you up." Right. I don't think he gives away anything. I think the fact that he gave him all this stuff indicates this was his plan. This was his intention. Fast track for Caius. But he has to make it look like they're twisting his arm. Right?
Yeah. No, yeah, I mean, this is classic him. I mean, again, he's handling it. He's doing the best he can with what he got, and that's pretty good. But not everything is going to always come up roses. It's not always going to go the way that this master negotiator plans it out.
Hold on. 5 minutes ago, you told me he was unhappy about everything and just did it to keep people peaceful. Now you're saying he's a master negotiator. Like, fucking pick one, Ray. Which is no, argue
to,
with
I don't have to pick
which
one.
take a position on this, Ray.
Okay, I will take a position. I say that we move on because it's getting close to an hour.
Oh my God, that's your position. You're working too hard. Have I kept you up past your bedtime? That's your position.
No.
Oh my God.
I honestly don't know how I feel because, one, you've got to think it goes against everything he's been talking about. These kids are too young, but like he's getting desperate. He needs somebody. But at the same time, you could be absolutely right. He could have planned the entire thing out to, again, start to expose these kids to the crowds and you know, bring them together. So it could have easily have been either way. It could have been a little bit of both. It could have been out of his control at first, and then he turns it to his situation, because you get the feeling he's done that a lot for the last 20 or 30 years, where something unexpected has happened, but he was able to turn it and turn it into an advantage because he's a master. Over time, he has become a master politician.
Speaking of politician, you really missed your calling. You should have gone into politics. Well, it could have been this way, or it could have been the other way. It could have been something else, really.
Look over there.
What's that?
If you're looking,
look at that. There's a boat. Where'd that come from?
If you're looking for a moral center, You're wasting your time.
Not even a moral center. I just want you to fucking pick a story and stick to it.
Okay. I think he was less happy and was dealing with the situation as best he could.
Do you think that?
Yes,
do I you do. Really think that? Or was he happy?
No.
Really?
No.
Or was he just happy?
I think he
you
was...
You want to change your mind again?
I think he was...
Do you want to jump on another horse?
Unhappy.
It's like, I'm straight. Oh, look, a dick. I'll suck that.
You said you wouldn't bring that. Anyway.
Now, the Senate voted Gaius the... the new title of Princeps Iuventutus.
Oh.
Iuventutus. Do you know what that means? Princeps Iuventutus?
No. Titties? No, I don't know what.
The Princeps of Youth.
Aww.
So there you go. He is given the Princeps of Youth title. He's basically Superboy is basically what they were doing. Superboy or young Indiana Jones.
Right.
One of the two. Anyway, young Sherlock Holmes, he's given that title. So, you know, he's being made a pontiff. He's attending Senate meetings. He's going to become a consul when he's 20,
damn,
which is even way younger than Tiberius. And he's got a princeps title. And Augustus wrote them, both the boys, a private letter where he prayed that they would inherit his position each in their turn.
Right.
Now, if you're Tiberius...
Yeah.
You know, things aren't looking like the cards are lining up well for your future here. You're being told, listen, you're like, fuck, Tiberius, you are my main number two guy. Look, have these honors, have a tribute, a triumph, I mean, have tribunicius potestas, have miserium, have all, look, just, you've got all the titles that can ever be had apart from princeps, my son. Just, you are, but, you know, use them up quickly because when these boys reach age, you're pretty much going to be put on the shelf. He became consul for the first time at age 29.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was a lot younger than he should have. I mean, as we've said before, back in the day, you had to be 40, I think, or 41. 40 to stand for election, 41 to get it. So a lot younger. And to be fair...
Right.
Yes, he'd done a bit before then. He'd been in a... fought in battles. He'd been a military tribune in Spain. He'd been a general in Armenia. Didn't fight, but, you know, had to wave a flag and a standard. Had fought in the Alpine campaigns. But it was the result of special dispensation because of his relationship to Augustus. Same with Drusus. So he doesn't really have much of a position to bitch here. He's been the beneficiary of a lot of special favors himself, but these kids are getting more favors, and it's sounding obvious that Gaius and Lucius are going to be the heir apparents, and Tiberius is just going to be the regent, keep shit tied down until they're old enough, and then probably end up working for them in some capacity. Yeah, now... that doesn't sound like a bad life for most of us, but we're not Claudians.
Right.
And he is a Claudian. And we've talked in previous episodes about, you know, the history of the Claudians, man. Claudians.
Yeah, it's intense.
Been around since the rape of the Sabines. They don't, they go back. They go back a ways in Rome. They've had... what is it, like 29 consuls or some shit? Couple of dictators? Yeah. I mean, the Claudians have got a long... They're probably the preeminent... They're the Bush family.
Right.
Of...
yeah.
Of Rome, right? They go back a ways. The Kennedys or the Roosevelts or the Bushes. These are political dynasties, the Claudians, except theirs goes back 700 years.
Well, they certainly don't think of themselves as number two. But here's the biggest thing, and not to take away from I'm Agrippa, but as we're about to find out, Tiberius is in the same position Agrippa is in, but Tiberius is not Agrippa. He's a very different person, and you get the sense that he's not as appreciative. He's not as self-sacrificing. He does not have the same makeup that Agrippa did, but obviously he's a lot younger than Augustus, and they didn't grow up together. So yeah, he's gotten a lot of good things out of it, but he has earned it. He has worked very hard, and now it looks like there might be a glass ceiling that he can't go past, and maybe that goes against his Claudian upbringing or genetics or whatever.
And so it was that around about this time, either slightly before Gaius was given all of these special honors, or slightly after, not really sure, the sources differ on that. Either way, around about the same time, Tiberius said, "Fuck all y'all, I'm Audi 5000. And he got up, took off the purple, or whatever fucking he was wearing.
Right.
And left. Said, you know what? Fuck this marriage. Fuck being your general. Fuck being the heir apparent. Fuck it all.
Right.
I don't want to do this anymore. I'm 36. I'm tired. I just want to go and eat fish and study philosophy. And he just left. He left Rome. Gave it all up. Retired at 36. Said, fuck this shit. And I think we'll have to pick up that story in our next episode.
He was tired.
Let me read a review before we finish. This is from Australia, BKBKBK8. Absolute gold, Rain Cam. Thanks for all the hard work that goes into preparing these podcasts. I've read these history for many years, but it's great to get your destined content. Don't know what that means, BK. Learn to fucking write, mate. Opinions and your light-hearted take on history's greatest events. Well, that's short, sharp, but that'll do. Shoot us an email with your address, BKBKBK8, and we'll send you a thank you note.
A thank you
gift.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for episode whatever that was. And we will be back. We're not going to take a break over Christmas, New Year, I hope, Ray. You've had too many breaks.
Right.
We're going to work on through. At least I'm going to work on through to the other side. And we'll be back probably early January. Don't forget, Renaissance Show, TRT. The RenaissanceTimes.com and the Europe Tour. Get in on that shit if it's not too late. And stay safe on the roads. Yeah, don't drink too much.
Yeah.
Don't kill your spouse and bury their body in the backyard, because somebody's going to find it. That's my policy.
It's only a matter of time. I need a stable of young men to come behind me.
I need a stable of young men to come behind me. I need a stable of young men to come behind me.
I need a stable of young men to come behind me.
I need a stable of young men to come behind me.
Come.
Come.